Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and with me today is Kathy Bennett, also goes by Kathy Meza on Facebook, and has a YouTube channel called Rich Cat Ranch. And Kathy, you hosted me on your Rich Cat Ranch Roundup, which was great. That's how we met. And you had found some of my horse geeks hacks on my YouTube channel,
Lifesavers.
how to care for a horse's eye. So today is a little bit off topic of horses because what the reason I wanted to talk to you is about your ranch and your YouTube channel and also what you do with dogs.
Okay.
Because so many horse people also have dogs.
Yes.
Yes, most horse people, I have to say, also have dogs. So I wanted to sort of look at what you're doing with the dogs is similar theory and understanding of how I work with horses.
I think so.
Yeah. So let's start off with just a little bit about your channel or your ranch or how, because your channel, I love the tagline. It says a passion for animals, love for life, and respect for nature. So, such a kindred soul. Yes, absolutely. So, how did you start the YouTube channel? And it looks like you have a smorgasbord of stuff you offer there too.
Yes. Well, initially we just had a Facebook page. We have a family business that's also called Rich Cat Ranch. So we have a family business page called Rich Cat Ranch on Facebook. And periodically I was sharing videos of our work with the animals here, the fosters that have come into the house, the horses, all of the animals. And over the years, people would frequently say to me, "You should have a YouTube channel." Oh, and I thought, no, thank you. No, it's so daunting and intimidating. And I watched YouTube. I enjoy YouTube. And I've often looked at YouTube as a great source of information and education. So if there's
Oh,
something
yeah.
I need to learn how to do or just something I was curious about, you literally can find anything here. And I didn't see myself being someone that could offer that to other people. I was just sharing animal related stuff on our Facebook page because our home business is primarily animal related. We care for people's horses and dogs and properties when they're away from home. So on their property, we take care of things for them when they have to be away. And we board dogs here in our home, we foster dogs here in our home. Through Good Shepherd Rescue of Texas. And we have a lot of animals. So we have a lot of joy that comes our way, a lot of funny things that happen because of our animals. And so Facebook was just a way for me to share that with people. But I just had just enough people encourage me to consider starting a YouTube channel that I thought, okay, why not? That might be fun if I can say I have a YouTube channel. And my first video was just a little 30-second clip because we have cameras all around the property. So we have cameras in our duck and goose pen. And I had a goose sitting on, was she sitting on goose eggs or duck eggs? I think she was sitting on duck eggs for me that particular year. And the cameras, you can record 30 seconds at a time with these cameras. So I captured the little video, I posted that on the YouTube channel, and it didn't get a lot of views, but it gave me the opportunity to see that YouTube is not so scary. It was not as complicated and technical as I was convinced it was going to be, which was part of why I really had no desire to do it initially. And I thought, okay, I can watch that. And then I shared that link on that Facebook page. And we got some views and the response was really nice. And I thought, okay, well, this could just give me an opportunity to share what we do here with more people, not just limited to our little, geographic area, people that might be potential clients for us. And it just took off from there. And then I realized that I don't necessarily raise my flock. We raise ducks and geese here, and I don't necessarily raise them the way everybody else raises theirs. And there's a lot of people that I feel like maybe steer folks in the wrong direction on some things. Ducks are completely different from chickens. geese are completely different from chickens, but a lot of the information you'll find out there,
It's all kind of the
the
same.
people, yeah, they're just lumping them all together. And what might work for a chicken could potentially kill a duck or a goose, as far as first aid and
Oh,
how do you care
interesting.
for them? Yeah, things like that. And I thought, I want to start being a source of information for people that maybe don't understand the differences. I want to
I
share
think,
what
yeah,
I've
that's amazing.
learned and yeah, the things that I have found that really do work best. Now, I've never raised chickens, so I can't, speak to the issue from that perspective, but I've certainly made some mistakes with my flock because I followed the advice of people that were basing their teachings on how to care for chickens and just spreading it across the board that it would work for waterfowl as well. And we've lost some ducks, and I think it was directly related to that, to doing something for them that would work for a chicken and doesn't work for a duck. So I thought, okay, so I want to be, if I had to say what I want to be as a channel one day, when all is said and done and I'm no longer here, A, I want it to be documentation of just my life story. I want my grandkids and great grandkids and I want people that know me or maybe didn't know me but are somehow connected to me through family or history to have a place where they can go back and look and see what was she like? What was their life like? What
Oh,
did she
that's so
enjoy and
interesting.
what was she good at and what did she not enjoy? And kind of just like a living diary that will just live on long after I'm gone. So, but I also want to be an education source for people. I share recipes and other little how-tos for things I've learned over the years. And so the ducks were initially a primary focus of the channel. We didn't have geese. Did we have geese? Yeah, well, obviously we had geese when we started the channel because I had that mama goose sitting on the duck eggs for me. But the geese were new. We had just added 2-day-old Toulouse goslings to the flock the previous spring. And then I had the video in the spring of 2021 of her sitting on some duck eggs for me. She wasn't old enough to raise goslings yet. They need to be a couple of years old before you allow them to produce offspring. So I thought, okay, well, then she wants to, she was laying eggs and she wanted to sit on them. And I thought, okay, well, we're just going to put you to work, Missy. And she hatched 6 little ducklings for me on Easter Sunday of 2021.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so again, I've got a handful of videos. I have a playlist that's devoted strictly to the ducks and geese, about their nutrition and about safe and predator-proof housing and how to bond with your ducks and enrichment activities. And I don't know that they're my most popular videos, but I'm not a big enough channel that enough people would even know I'm here to come and maybe learn a different way to do it.
You're
But
well, you're way bigger than I am. And I love meeting other, like when I started perusing YouTube, because I was pretty intimidated about putting myself out there as well. And I really realized the people who were just out to authentically help other people and share information, I always gravitated to listening to those type of people. And from every walk of life, I just really started to enjoy YouTube and felt, especially in 2020, started to feel like, oh, there's more of us out there. And then I saw, because of all the isolation related to COVID, all of a sudden, little farms, 5-acre farms, were becoming the number one property for sale. There's all these people who are, trying to move out to a more rural area, have a farm, maybe have chickens or ducks or geese for the first time. Or I've met more people that got a COVID horse and that was going to be their project. It's like they didn't have a horse, they had the property, and they just picked up a horse and they go, well, this is what I'm going to do during COVID. I'm going to work with a
Okay.
horse.
How interesting. Okay.
And so I went, well, that's exactly sort of what I want to be, is just put information out there that's useful and helpful. And it took a lot of the intimidation out of it for me.
Well, for me, that again was my initial objective, and it's still a big part of the channel. But as I've grown more comfortable as a content creator and more comfortable being on screen, it's branched out, and I share a lot of other things that I like and things that mean something to me, things that are important to me. I'm very musically inclined and have an extensive music background. So I have a covers playlist. I'm a singer. I play piano, but I don't have a piano right now, and I haven't spent a lot of time with it for a long time because I'm kind of busy with other things. And so I've branched out to try some new things just for fun. I do want the channel to be something that's fun for me as well as
Oh,
something
yeah.
that I can use to teach people or maybe offer information that they can't find in another place. But and we had the flock. I think we'd had the flock, 5 years or so before we put that first video out. So it really wasn't pandemic related or anything.
Right, right.
We were doing the channel in 2021. So everybody was shut down. And I guess that was maybe a factor because I thought, okay, well, I'm not at work, so here's the time to learn about YouTube. I have time to be on the computer and
I
figure out how to edit videos and things. So
Yeah.
maybe it was indirectly a factor, but people had just suggested it for so long that I thought worst thing that can happen is I won't like it or it won't work, and then I'm no worse off than I was before I ever tried it. So
Absolutely.
why not give it a go?
No, and I don't script, I don't rehearse, I don't practice, and I really don't edit because it would just take too much time. So even my horse hack videos or training videos, I go, it's enough for me to get the Pivo set up and the microphone working and get the thing uploaded. And it's like all of that is kind of enough. And so I haven't edited. I had one gal who was doing my videography, and she could edit, and she's the one that put up some of the end screens and did some of the graphics. But that far, I'm not that far yet myself. So I go record it, and up it goes.
Well, I don't script anything. Now, when I do my interviews on the roundup, I often work from a list of questions. I do have a list of questions, and I don't use all of them because not every channel, not all the questions would be applicable to every kind of channel.
Right.
A lot of the questions are just basic interview questions because my objective is to let my audience get to know who that content creator is beyond whatever they might see in their videos on their channel. I want them to know, who is this person? What is she like? What is she, what motivates her? What moves her? What irks her and or him? And so not necessarily scripted, but I do work from the list of questions. And then my videos, it's important to me. I want my videos to come across as if they're not scripted. I want it to be real life. Okay, watch. I'm going to show you now how I do this. Watch along, and a lot of the things I take video of, it's things I've done lots of times. So it's not like it's the first time for me and I want to be sure I remember to cover everything. It's something I do routinely, but I know not everyone knows how to do it, or there are a lot of people that just live vicariously through videos they're watching on YouTube. I imagine there are people that have never had a horse. They've never touched a horse. They maybe never seen a horse in real life. They've seen movies and TV shows or stories. And maybe they dream of having a horse, or
And they
maybe they
want to learn about
have a
it.
horse and they heard something and they want to learn about it. So I know that's probably true for a lot of what I share on the channel too. And people will even tell me regarding the dogs. I know you mentioned that specifically. People will tell me I don't have any dogs, or my last dog was a Chihuahua or something completely opposite of my dogs. But I just enjoy watching your dogs. I enjoy watching you interact with the dogs. And
Oh, that's
yeah,
awesome.
so I just want it to be real life. I want it to, give people an idea of what it's like to live where we live. We have a wonderful little property here in a beautiful part of North Central Texas. And I want them to know what it's like to have a lot of animals, what is
Yeah,
that like
absolutely.
goal-wise, schedule-wise,
No,
just
and I
what it's like.
think you had a video about like caring for the animals is your therapy. I think there was a bit, and I feel the same way.
Oh
I
my
go,
goodness.
it is, It's what keeps you, it's a fitness program, it's a mental health program, it's a
Absolutely.
love and devotion program. I know
Absolutely.
it is when
Absolutely.
you have a bunch of animals that you have to take care of, it's your life is organized around that, but it's a beautiful life. And I do think sharing that with people from all walks of life is really a gift for some people who don't get to live on a farm or who are maybe thinking about having animals, but don't really understand what that's going to entail.
Yeah. And I know that doing rescue work, because again, we rescue, for the most part, it's German Shepherd dogs, because the rescue we work with is Good Shepherd Rescue of Texas. But every now and then there's a little, heartbreaking story. And it's a dog that's not a German Shepherd, but there's someone available to foster, and the organization has funds to cover care or bedding or surgeries or whatever they might need. And so that little dog comes in. One of our favorite fosters of all time was not a German Shepherd dog. And I'm still friends with the family that adopted him to this day. So we still get updated pictures. And
Nice.
he was with us a little longer than some of our other fosters have been, in part because he wasn't a German Shepherd dog. People
Right.
that look to Good Shepherd Rescue, they're looking for a German Shepherd. They know they want a German Shepherd. But the little family that found him, that was true for them as well. They went to the Good Shepherd website looking for a German Shepherd dog until they saw his picture, and then watched some of the videos that I was sharing of him on our Facebook page and on our Good Shepherd Rescue Facebook page. And they thought, oh my goodness, he's not a shepherd, but he's the most amazing little dog. So,
Oh, that's
but it's
great.
just incredibly gratifying work. It's incredibly therapeutic work to save a life. To save. And I come from a, I'm from my background is in healthcare. So I spent a whole career as a caretaker, a human caretaker, and that really fed me. I just have always felt called to be involved in that kind of thing. And I feel like I'm sort of still doing the same kind of work, but this is even more satisfying and gratifying for me, because I then don't have to deal with the rude or less than pleasant patient that, they're not comfortable
They
anyway.
don't feel good. Yeah, it's
Right. And then they're going to have to pay sometimes a lot of money for what it is they need, and they don't
Right.
want it, or it's a challenge for them to be able to cover costs. And the animals don't do that to me. They don't have hangups or bad attitudes. They
They're a
can,
lot less complicated.
oh my goodness, yes, they can have
Yeah.
their cranky moments, but, and I just really feel like they show their appreciation. They really love unconditionally, and on some level, they're aware of what it is I do for them. I feel
Oh,
like that.
absolutely.
I feel like they're connected to me that way. The flock has been, I was new to any kind of birds, raising or owning any kind of birds, until I got my first little six ducklings. Which I bought at Tractor Supply. After many years of buying our horse supplies at Tractor Supply, every spring they would have the little chicks and the little ducklings. Oh, and I don't know. I never even was as interested in chickens as I was ducklings. So every year, every spring, I would say, oh, it would be so nice to have some little ducklings, but I didn't know anything about it. We didn't have anything set up yet for them. And then one year, I don't know why, I could not control myself. Came home, six little ducklings. We got them set up. I had a brooder set up out in the garage. This was spring, so the weather was nice already, but we didn't have a pen, anything. And so Richard and I got busy. He did most of the work, and he built a nice pen. It was initially just a one room pen, and that moved to a one room pen that had a big coop kind of thing. Then it moved to a two room pen. We added a second room on it, and so the second room could be used for brooding babies, or if I had an injured or ill member of the flock, they could stay there and not have to be harassed by the other ducks. And at this point, I'd love to have even another room, so that in the rowdy time of year, when the boys are really boys, that the boys could stay away from the girls, so that the girls could sleep at night. But they get along well, and the geese kind of monitor that. The geese actually do a really good job of refereeing and not allowing the boys to be too rough with the girls.
Oh, that's so
I've
funny.
seen that.
We had geese when I was a teenager. We had the big white Chinese geese, and they would run under the horses. Like if they were trying to get away from people, they would run in the horse pasture, and we could never stop it. And the horses were so careful. These geese would literally run right underneath them and try to shelter between their legs. And the horses would try to step around them, but I think every goose that ever lived at our place ended up with a broken wing
At some point, yeah.
at some point and never killed them, but they would get their wings stepped on. And so we had these like Jerry, we had these sort of crippled geese going around our property.
Oh no. Well, we've got our
But
little, I have my little batch of I call them senior ladies. So some of the females in the flock, the ducks, the geese are, they're big and strong and they take care of themselves, and you don't mess with a goose. You don't
No,
mess.
you don't mess with a goose.
But I've got a handful of older girls, ducks in the flock, that just over the years, again, they've had injuries. The boys have overmated it, or something's happened and they've got an injury. So they're kind of slow. They don't get around well. And so they have their own little section of the yard with a little pond that we built, so that they can still have swim time and outside time. And then they stay in a separate section overnight. There are two boys that stay with them. They're our youngest boys in the flock. They're little mallards that we rescued from the Humane Society. I got a call. I guess it's been almost 3 years ago now, that they had rescued, taken in two ducks, and they're not set up for
Oh,
water breeders. Humane Society, that's dogs and cats, and there is a great equine division of the Humane Society here in North Texas. But ducks is not, that's not their thing. So I went
But
right away and got them.
isn't it amazing, though, to see their intelligence? Like, I think humans think because we have the biggest frontal cortex of mo almost any species other than whales and dolphins, that we think we are the superior intelligence on the planet. And I go, animals really show us there's lots of different types of intelligence. There's not just one kind of intelligence. And I did an interview with a lady. Have you ever heard of the HeartMath Institute?
I don't think so.
It's a research center to, they put out 200 research papers on how the heart functions, the human heart.
Oh, wow.
And that there are more ascending from the heart to the brain nerves than there are descending from the brain to the heart. And
Interesting.
that the heart has a different kind of intelligence. And I think that's where we really connect with animals. And I go, I'm just as excited to talk about ducks and geese as I am horses or dogs, because you just, when you have that kind of love for animals and you live with them especially, you see that they have this incredible nonverbal language. They have ways of communicating. They figure things out. They are very intelligent in their own way. I go, most of them don't have an opposable thumb, so that limits them in the human world, but that doesn't mean they're any less intelligent. Or to watch how they take care of each other and how they look after each other. And in even the interspecies relationships, like you saw my cat dog who's in all of my Aussie videos, and
Out
he
there supervising.
out there supervising, and the horses are so careful not to step on him. And they sniff him, get along with him, but that sort of interspecies relationship is just beautiful.
Oh, yes. And our dogs, now we don't let the dogs mix a lot because typically we have a visitor dog here. But in the rare moments when it's only our dogs are even allowed to mingle and mix with the ducks and geese. Number one, again, the geese will not tolerate anything dangerous coming too close. So if and when the dogs are looking a little too curious, or they're too close to the area where the ducks are, looking for bugs, things, the geese will run them off. And again, if you've never, you will have seen it because you grew up with geese too. You have not seen a goose protecting its territory or its flock, then you won't necessarily understand what I'm saying. But I'm just, for those that don't know, don't mess with a goose.
Don't
They will
mess with
get
a
business done.
goose. No, and the big
Oh, we lost.
Chinese white geese were huge. And
Oh, yes.
cracked me up as a teenager is those geese on the attack, they're just the right size and they go straight for someone's crotch with their
Oh yeah.
beak.
Oh yeah. Like here, if
They do not mess around.
the dogs are causing a problem, they go right for their necks.
Wow.
They go right for the neck. So the dogs have all learned very early on when they join the family, don't mess with them. But we had a white shepherd. He crossed over in November of 2021 that would help me herd them in at night. So they would be out, foraging, whatever they were doing, and then it's time to put them up before the sun goes down. And he would do the classic shepherd herding patterns to get them all rounded up. So before we had geese, he was my like flock leader. But the geese now really help manage the ducks. They're just very hyper vigilant, and they know sounds. So when they hear hawks, they'll be scanning the sky. We've lost some ducks to hawks. We lost some ducks and one of the geese to a bobcat a few summers ago. And I heard the commotion. This was during the pandemic. We're home all day. Heard a commotion. The back door was open. And I glance out the back door into my backyard. This wasn't on the pasture. This was right in my backyard. And there's a bobcat, and my goose is fighting with the bobcat while the other geese in the flock were like pushing the ducks back toward their yard to get
Oh,
them away.
wow.
Um,
Yeah.
and I just was amazed. I had heard that geese are that good at defending and protecting their family, whoever it is they identify as their family, and that they will fight to the death if necessary. But that's the first time I'd seen it. That's the first time I'd seen it. So we did lose that goose. He lived through the night, but crossed over that next morning. And we did lose some ducks that day, but there were a whole lot of other ducks then that were spared
Yeah.
because of what he sacrificed for the flock. And so I'm a huge lover of just, again, animals in general, but geese are incredibly intelligent, sometimes too much for their own good. So they can untie any kind of knot.
Oh
They
my gosh.
can break through or undo like the cable ties, the zip ties, things like that. So I have to be very creative if there are wires or cords or things that I need to,
Yeah.
have somewhere to take care of something. They're very, very curious. And then, generally speaking, waterfowl are so trainable. I would never have known. And it's not the same kind of training like it would be with the dogs. They're just very, you can condition them. You have a
Well, and
routine and you
it's so
physically.
interesting because once you I met this guy who was the head of all trainers at the where was it? Pennsylvania Pittsburgh Zoo.
Okay.
And he
Oh.
was so interesting, but he said all of his animal handlers, and that's where I learned a lot more about what do they call it? Enrichment. Right. So that's the zoos now are becoming more sanctuaries than they are circuses. That's
Nice.
the new thrust with zoos.
Okay.
And this guy was fascinating because he said for all of his handlers and people doing enrichment with all the different types of animals, he started them off with chicken training. And he said, look, just learning to train a chicken. You can pretty much get the idea of how to work with positive reinforcement using positive to teach almost any animal anything.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I took a tour of the zoo, and they even had the polar bears, instead of having to sedate or tranquilize the animals for routine vet care, they were using operant conditioning every feeding time to get the bears like to present their paw. Or open their mouth so they could check the teeth or look, present the ear. And even the big cats were taught to lean up against a fence to present the jugular vein for a blood draw or for an IM injection or something like that. And so it's way beyond horse training. When you work with animals, I think kindly, I just think that translates. And that's why I wanted to. Do this podcast with you is because I'm always mired in the world of horses, which I love. But it was fascinating to go around the Pittsburgh Zoo and see what they were doing with all these different species, all these different enrichment programs, and how they were using positive reinforcement to help the animals deal with part of being in a domestic situation, you
Right.
know,
And
that we
they're
can
not
teach
natural.
them exactly. And I go, even horses and ducks and geese and chickens, I think chickens are, no, there's wild chickens in Hawaii. I was going to say, I don't think there's any place that chickens are wild, but Hawaii, they have wild chickens. But to really work with an animal, the whispering part or the taming part is really just kindness and not being too demanding and finding a way to say yes or no. Because that's really the conversation is yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. That's all it is.
I feel like at the top of my priorities or the top of my bag of tricks has always been to try and figure out what's going on with them. You know, why is he doing that? Is he
Or
afraid?
from their
Is he
perspective.
hungry?
Yeah.
Yes. Is he hurt? Is he did he get scared? You know, what's going on when I see something that maybe is concerning or it's not a behavior that seems normal, then
Right.
I just try to figure out what's going on with him. And maybe it sounds corny. I just feel like a lot of times when I've done that, there's a connection. Then something happens, and then the animal realizes, oh, she's here to help me, or
She's
she's
here
here.
to help. Yeah.
She's gonna be nice to me. She wants to give me something, or and I think I learned that lesson probably most of all with my horses. We were new to horses, owning horses when we got our first rescue. He's a retired racehorse, a big thoroughbred boy, 5 years old when we got him, so still very spunky, very energetic, very bratty, and knew no other life than racing and training. Racing and all the things that now I feel terrible for racehorses to know just how strict their, routines are. They don't just get to be horses and,
No, it's a military
play all
life.
day. It's
Yeah.
so hard on them. And so there was a huge learning curve for both sides, for him and
Yes.
for us, on for him just to become a horse, just a horse, just a pet, just a doesn't have to work all day, doesn't have to have people poking and prodding all the time. And
No, and the life of a thoroughbred, even at the breeding farms, like breeding in the thoroughbred world, no matter what area you live in or what country you live in, everybody breeds at the same time. There's a breeding season. Then there's a foaling season. Then all the yearlings are handled the same way. All the 2-year-olds are handled the same way. All of the early training, getting them started under saddle, is done the same way, farm to farm to farm, and at the same time. So it's a very sort of equivalent to like a rigid military life or military school. And some horses thrive in that. Some of the successful racehorses thrive in that environment because it's a very predictable life and they're always handled by very professional horse people, people who know what they're doing. But when they exit that life, they do not have a clue.
Lost. They're
Yeah,
completely
they're
lost.
completely lost. Yeah.
And
And
Cabo, that was Cabo. And I mean, he's mellowed. I say he's mellowed a lot. I just think he's learned just now how to be a horse. Now he just now this is his life, and he doesn't connect life with all the routines that he had before. But wow, as a green horse guardian, who I was on the fast track for either getting hurt or figuring out how do I connect with him? How do I show him that I'm just here to provide for him and take care of him and spend time with him? I'm not here to work him and run him and,
And I don't know if you noticed this with him, but it was one of those private epiphanies I had. I was working with a yearling for a sale up in Kentucky, and I was working with this yearling just doing groundwork and trying to get the horse gentler and easier to handle at the sales. And it had been a week or two. I had worked with this yearling every day. And one day this yearling looked at me and went, "You're the same person." And I realized in that moment that a lot of the thoroughbreds don't know how to connect with a single person because it's
The whole team.
the routine is what they rely on, but it's always interchanging faces, interchanging people, interchanging energy. And so this horse finally looked at me one day and actually saw me. And I went, oh, like that's when I realized. I go, you don't have a connection with people. And as soon as they live in our backyards, of course, it's one person and no routine. And so it's completely the opposite life. And I don't know if you found that same moment with your thoroughbred where he looked at you and went, oh, you're like my person. You're
I
the
don't
one here.
remember a specific moment, but I do remember reaching a point where I could tell that he figured it out. Oh, I live here. All I have to do is whatever I want to do.
Eat grass, move around.
I can run if I want, but I don't have to run. I can go to the pond and get in the pond if I want, or I can stay in the barn all day. I can just sleep in the barn. And I do remember feeling like, and it was a very a drastic change really for him. Now I felt like I was trying to be consistent throughout and just, again, routine. We had feeding time was always at the same time. And then I would go out and walk him around on a lead rope or just something, just so he would learn my smell and be able to recognize me. But if new people would come around, if we had visitors come, not little children, he was always very gentle and sweet with little kids. But anyone close to my height, whether it was an adult or a kid, if they were a bigger human, oh, he would just test boundaries and try to get as close, like no personal space. And I just remember feeling like he was just like almost nervous about everyone. He had to, either assert himself right away or just test them and see, do they know what they're doing? Stay aware of what they're supposed to do around a horse. And so he's not like that now. And so again, there was a shift at some point where I think he realized. Now, I think it did him some good when we rescued our second horse. So we had him for about 3 months, just him. And then we rescued an old mare. Just to, we had no, again, rescue world. We only know how old he is because he came from the racing world. He has a spinal condition. He has spinal ataxia. And so after a year or two of racing, that presented and he had to be repaired. And his owner, his wife is a veterinarian who often provides volunteer equine care for the Humane Society. We have a relationship with the Humane Society only because they know us through pulling dogs from shelters for rescue for a Good Shepherd. So we got a call asking if we were ready for our first horse. We had lived at this property for about 6 months, 6 or 7 months. And we got it specifically because I had a dream of having a horse one day. I was the little girl that always wanted a pony growing up. And so we got this call, and I thought our first horse would be an old mare, just, already worked out all her friskiness and stuff. No, we got this just really handful of boy, but it really helped him, I think, then when we got Liberty. So his name is Cabo, and we then rescued Liberty. Again, another phone call from the Humane Society about a big flock or flock, a big herd of horses that the owner had passed away, and there was no one else in the family in a position to take them in or care for them on the property. I think there were maybe 20 horses in the herd, so they were desperate to find places for them. So, and I knew that, ideally he would be best suited for a mare to have a mare companion, particularly because he was just so bratty and spunky and incorrigible at times. So she came, and it was really interesting to watch how he deferred to her. How, I mean, she just set him straight right away. The first time he got a little too close or sniffing where she didn't want him sniffing, and he got a kick at the right time. And then he started thinking, oh, well, I'm not the king of the world, I guess. And so that was really good for him. And it was good for me. It was still a little while after that, though, that I felt that shift where he realized oh, this is where this is my home. Like, this is where I'm going to always be now. This is
Yeah.
where, you know, and I don't have to work every day. And I think she may have helped him learn that because, again, she was just a pasture horse. These people just had a herd of horses, just I guess because they loved horses. Maybe she was a trail horse at some point. You know, we don't know. But she was so good-natured and sweet-spirited and low-key and friendly and affectionate and like the opposite of what we initially saw in him.
Yeah.
And he's taken on some of those qualities, I think, because of her and now the companion he has now, which is a mule. We have a mule that is his companion because, unbeknownst to us, when we rescued that second horse, his companion Liberty, she was older than we thought. Again, she came into rescue. There was no way to really know how old she was. So all we were told was, well, she's at least 20. But I thought, okay, yeah, that's more what we thought we would get. Older,
Yeah.
don't have to train, you know, get some
Right.
bad behaviors out of her. And so she crossed over 3 years after she came to join the family. And Cabo was beside himself.
Oh, yeah, I
Always,
bet.
always. I was very aware of the emotional intelligence of horses and their need to have companions and that they're herd animals. And but I was not prepared for the grief I saw from him, particularly not from him again, because he had been so full of himself and
No,
had
and when he comes
all
in without a companion, they can kind of come in as a lone horse and make do. But when they lose a companion, they grieve as deeply. Some horses, not all of them, but once they, like this mare, sort of taught him, hey, here's how horses talk to each other, you big dummy.
Absolutely.
You've been
Yeah.
living in the human
Absolutely.
world for too
Yeah.
long.
Yeah.
And so sort of restored that natural herd dynamic. And I think they grieve that almost more than the individual. So then you definitely like have to have a second equid, which could
Yes.
be a donkey or a
Yes.
mini or a mule, but
Yes.
another equid because they feel safe within that social structure of the herd.
Yes.
And
Yes.
once they have it, it's very hard to take it away.
Yes. Well, I was so concerned. I mean, it was heartbreaking to me seeing him, and it was obvious that's what was happening. He was almost frantic. He was just so grief-stricken and he wasn't eating. I mean, that was like a huge sign.
Yeah.
I even called the vet and the vet said, well, you need to keep an eye on that because he could hurt himself. He can make himself sick.
Yeah.
So I reached out right away then to our contact at the Humane Society again and said, we've got to find someone for him. We've just got to, and they always need, they either need fosters or they need someone to adopt, their horses. I mean, a lot of people can
Yeah.
take a dog or a cat or chickens or but not
Horses are harder to
everybody can take
place.
a horse.
Yeah.
That's a real challenge. So we went out maybe 2 or 3 days after Liberty crossed over to meet the horses that were available for adoption, thinking we would get a horse. And that's what we get for thinking. We met Delilah. Delilah is our mule. Her name is Delilah Rose. And she had been confiscated. She was it was a cruelty case. There was a hoarder in the area, way too many animals. They were all in really poor condition because there just was no way that this person could provide for them or care for them. So she was in pretty bad shape when she was first brought into rescue, but we met her several months after she had been brought into rescue. And so she was healthy and is just so connect. She just connects with people. Like, so many lessons to learn from animals.
Oh,
Just
yeah.
the horrors that she went through, and she didn't hold that against anyone. She didn't turn inward and decide she didn't want to, you know, be involved with people again. So she came to us. She approached us when we were in the pasture because we were going to go meet some horses, and she let us pet on her. And I just thought, oh, how sweet is that? She came right up to us.
They pick us.
Oh, and then she followed us around as the Humane Society rep was talking about, you know, over here is where we keep these horses, and over here is where we keep these horses. And so we'll go over here first and let you meet these guys. And she followed us around all that time. And then we went through a gate and closed the gate to go to another area to meet some horses. And she just cried and cried and cried, watching us walk farther and farther, and I would turn back to look at her, and she would just cry out that sweet little donkey kind of sound that people think of. And then the person said to me, she said, "I'm sure you know this already, but most of the time, it's not the human that makes the choice." But we went ahead and we met some
Hint,
horses.
hint, hint,
Yeah,
yeah.
most went ahead and met some of the horses, which for me was just still fun because if I can be around horses and touching horses and talking to horses, then it's a good day. But the whole time she just stood at that gate watching and waiting for us to come back and calling out. So we finished meeting the horses, and Richard and my husband and I were talking, saying, "What about a mule? What about a mule?" And the person then said, "You know, a horse and a mule together, that's a great companion
It is.
situation. That's a great bond that can form."
And the mules are
And we,
actually like geese.
oh gosh,
Mules,
yes.
yeah,
Guardian,
they
protectors,
are guardians.
absolutely. So, long story short, Delilah came home with us. And
Nice.
it's been one of the most amazing things we ever did. And so, from the beginning, they were fast friends. He was so excited to have a new companion. They took to each other right away. She did have to give him a kick, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was with us. He came over and he's sniffing around and getting all up in her space, and she's still trying to figure out, you know, where is this place? What is this? You know, where's the food? What, you know? And she gave him a kick, and I don't know that they ever had a problem between them since then.
Yeah,
And she looks at him
sorted.
straight. When he's too rowdy, I'll watch her. It's fun to watch her because she's not shy about correcting
Oh,
him.
no,
And
the mares really run the show.
best thing that happened to him. And she's again just gentle from the start. Our grandchildren at the time, some of them were still very small. You could just plop them up there on her back, put a lead rope around her. We didn't have a saddle or anything, and take the kids around for little rides. And she just ate that up. I think she enjoyed the attention too. And he's now at a point, we've got some little neighbor girls just to the north of us here that like to come over sometimes and brush them and, you know,
Oh, nice.
comb their manes and
Nice.
stuff. And it just warms my heart to see that even Cabo, Mr. Brighty Cabo, that sometimes doesn't want to stand still long enough for me to clean his feet, or, you know, but he can tell that those little girls are just eating it up, that they're getting to touch on him and
No,
take.
and that was the other thing I learned from the HeartMath Institute was that horses are one of the few animals that they're the measurable electromagnetic frequency that's given off by their hearts actually can influence the rhythm of the human heart. It's
Wow.
one of the few animals whose heart actually affects the what they call this the spaces between the beats,
Wow.
the coherence of our own heartbeat. And I
Wow.
find that interesting. And I go, well, maybe it's only because they've researched that with horses. I go, I'm sure all
Oh,
animals
true. There could be some level of that everywhere. Yeah.
everywhere with all animals, because I think that language, and that's why even like here you have an off the track thoroughbred 5-year-old, that's like most people's nightmare backyard horse, especially if you
I'm
have
telling you, it was a.
other small animals and children and dogs. And yet that reputation I don't find is deserved, because it's how you work with them, it's how you handle them. And they have just as much of a big heart as any other animal.
Oh, he's a big sap.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a
And
sap.
they learn.
And he knows praise when he gets praise. He does understand that, and you can see how he soaks that in and wants more of it. So he's
Yeah.
come a long way. But I think the females, I think the mares that we've paired him up with have really, really helped him a lot.
No, and I
But and
had
so
one gelding that I bought that was such an interesting gelding. I took him because he was kind of a runt. He had really, really great bloodlines. He was supposed to be this super expensive horse that I was starting as a youngster for a client, and he just never grew. By the time he was 3 years old, when he should have been getting ridden and started, he looked no bigger than a yearling coming to. He was just scrawny and tiny. And so I took him because I just didn't have the heart. This horse was so soulful and so sweet. I didn't have the heart to see him go into competitive life and being a runt and being pushed. So I took him. And that horse as a horse trainer, having horses coming and going, and I've been at some very big barns and I finally have my own small place. But every single horse that I would put that horse with, his name was Jasper. Jasper never ever fought another horse, and he was accepted by every horse. He was like just the most magical creature that he was my farm diplomat. I go, anybody new coming in, throw him in with Jasper. Jasper showed him the ropes, told him not to worry. They settled down. They were best friends. And then and Jasper was that way with any horse I ever put him in with. And he just had this magical connection of helping the other horses settle down. So I had him and a couple others of my personal horses that are what I call my anchor horses. And so when I have new horses coming in training, especially if they're afraid or it's a new place, they don't know if they've been sold or not, they have no idea what's happening when they come in training. And some of my anchor horses will just get them settled right in. And it's so amazing to see that intelligence. And Jasper knew his job as the farm diplomat. He goes, I'm up first. This is my job. This is what I do. I get everybody to settle down and
Amazing. It's
settle in.
and I wanted to just share that. So, and a lot of people do know this about me, and I share enough of this on my channel that people know, but just the concept of connection with animals. And even this may really sound strange, but what you shared about the ability of horses and the energy that comes from their hearts being able to impact the energy around them. So I'm a bug lover. I particularly love spiders. I love snakes and really love them. I think they're beautiful. They're fascinating. I understand their importance in nature, in our ecosystem, and jumping spiders are my favorites.
I
And
love jumping spiders.
one of the reasons they're my favorites is because of all the spiders, they really seem to connect. They interact. I mean, I can hold be holding one and talking to it, and it's looking at me, and it'll tilt its little head, or it'll hear another little sound, and it's just mind-boggling to me. And those interactions, so regardless of the animal, those kind of interactions for me, when I feel a connection, even if it's just a fleeting experience, it does something for my heart. It
I think it wakes up a part
spider.
of us that we all have, but animals, like, they wake up that part of us, whether it's being able to see through another's eyes or have compassion or have this nonverbal conversation. I go, these conversations around my farm are as interesting to me as going out for
And
coffee with friends.
I learn as much about myself and the world because of those conversations. And then regarding my dogs, I mean animals in general, but I probably have deeper connections with the dogs. I mean, they live in the house with me. One of them sleeps in the bed every night, and they're just more an every moment part of the routine and the family here. So in our pack, we're a three German Shepherd dog. So we have two boys and a girl. The girl was our second foster failure with Good Shepherd Rescue. And foster failure just means she came in as a foster. The intent was that she would be then adopted into another home. Our job was just to teach her that, not all humans are bad. A house is a safe place, that other dogs can be your allies and your companions, and just teach her how to be a dog. And she was adopted. She got adopted, and she was away for about a week. We had her for about 2 weeks before she was adopted because she had just been spayed when she came to us. And we like for the healing to be done and the stitches to be out before they go to their new homes. And so she was adopted. She did great here. She was about, oh, just shy of 2 years old, so 16 or 18 months old, maybe, when we brought her in as a foster. But the family that adopted her reached out after they'd had her for about a week, and they said she was just too destructive and she was getting on the counters. And I thought we'd not seen any of that here. So maybe she was stressed. Maybe she was doing that. But a lot of times people just don't, again, they want a German Shepherd. because they're beautiful dogs and they're super smart. And but then they get home and they get a German Shepherd and they're big and they eat a lot and they need activity. They've got to be, they have to have a job.
Yeah.
They have to have mental stimulation. They cannot be left just laying around all day or in a crate all day, or they'll go bananas. And yeah, then they'll cause problems and demonstrate things that nobody wants to have to deal with. And so in our rescue, the policy is that if for any reason an adoptive family cannot keep their dog or chooses not to keep their dog, they come back to rescue. Now, sometimes it doesn't always mean they come back to the same foster that had them before, because that foster may have another couple of fosters and there's just no room. But we were in a position to just have her back. We only had our two boys at the time. Again, she was our second foster failure. One of our other German Shepherd dogs was our first foster failure
Which means you kept
ever.
him.
Yes. And I kind of knew, and Richard told me after the fact, he said, "I knew we wouldn't let him go as soon as you saw his picture. He was a white German Shepherd. My kids grew up with a white German Shepherd. He had been living on the streets for like 2 years. He had a broken leg, and a kind person who had seen him coming around her business, her office, started putting food and water out for him. And over time, I mean, it took almost a year. Over time, he came close enough to her that she could touch him. So she caught him. She took him to the vet. She got his leg fixed. She got him neutered. And then she reached out to her contact at Good Shepherd Rescue. She does collie rescue, the lady that saved him. And the German Shepherd rescue in her area, she was down near Houston and we're up near Fort Worth. They were full. They had no fosters available. So she reached out to her friend here at Good Shepherd Rescue, who said, "Let me see if I can find a foster." She contacted us. We made a trip down to pick him up and bring him home. And again, when he and I met eyes in the back, she was sitting in the back of her SUV with the hatch up. And she and he were there on the back of the car, and we pulled into that parking lot. I can't even remember where we met, like at a Jack in the Box or something. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I thought, "Oh my
He's
gosh,
here
this is how it happens." I
to
learned about foster failures. We had had probably six or eight fosters already at that
Yeah.
point, and they all went to their homes just fine, even though we loved them. But wow, it was just almost magical. And he was a challenge because, again, he had lived on the streets. He didn't know how to be a house dog. And it was kind of rough in the beginning, but I fell in love with him and
Yeah.
we made the commitment. And he's then the dog that would go on to herd the ducks for me at night to get them
But
in the.
I think you make such a good point that I know our sort of topic was to talk about dog training and horse training, but this sidebar I think is far, far more interesting because what training to me is learning to actually communicate with the animal. And
Yes.
that it can be all animals. And I
Yes.
used to catch snakes as a kid. I'm fascinated with snakes, but that was like
You were
when I
just
was a toddler, I used to
twin
catch.
separated at birth, aren't you?
But all animals. And like, you know, the spiders, all the undesirable animals, I go, they're all God's creatures and they all have a role to play. And if we learn to
Yes.
understand them, like, even though I call myself a horse trainer, it's funny. Like, I'll tell horses, well, I smell like a trainer, but I'm not that bad, you know? Because to me, the training is really that nonverbal conversation. And I go, I am somewhere between an interpreter. I feel more like an interpreter for people to go, here's what your horse is trying to say to you. And not like an animal communicator. I go, that's different. I go, this is stuff we can all see right in front of our face if we pay attention. The animals are communicating with us all the time. And that dog that felt safe and secure and comfortable at your house, people think, well, I own the animal, so I expect it to obey and work like my bicycle. And I go, well, even your bicycle isn't fully in your control because it depends on how
Good
you
luck
ride
with
and how you
that.
balance, right? And so, but that to me is training to create an environment where the animal feels safe to communicate with us and we start to understand. maybe the nuances first of the breed or the species, but it always comes down to the individual. And I go,
Right.
they're as individual as people.
Absolutely. All of our dogs, again, they're all German Shepherds, and they all came from different stories. You know, some were not very pleasant histories before they came into our home. Some were just, you know, since someone fell on hard times and they weren't able to provide for their animals anymore. They lost their home, lost their job, something, and had to reach out and find another place for them. But they definitely have their own personalities and their own ways of dealing with things. And I just wanted to say that what I've come to understand about animal training in general is that it's not the animal that needs the training anyway. It's the human that needs the training.
Needs to
The
open up
human
to that
needs to,
communication.
yes, let go of the ego and understand that this is another deserving, intelligent, emotional being that wants, they want a connection. Even the most terrified of dogs, even the, you know, most abused animals, they want that. They need that. Dogs are pack animals. Horses are herd animals. They need fellowship. They need family. And they can bond with the human just like they can bond with another animal. It's a different, you know, communication. I mean, you're maybe speaking a little bit different language, but the connection is still there.
But we
And
can fill those needs. Like that to me is enrichment, is filling the sort of instinctual needs of that particular species or that particular breed. But even
yes.
as a horse trainer, I'm one of the few that works across the spectrum of breeds and disciplines. I go, it doesn't matter if somebody rides trail rides, Western, endurance, jumpers, dressage, racing. I go, that doesn't matter when we're talking about the communication between you and your horse
Right.
or
It's
the
still horse.
balance of the movement. It's still a horse and it's still a human. And so the age of the horse, the breed of the horse, the job of the horse, I go, those things don't matter as much as to me, the magic is in deeply understanding and developing that relationship, that bond through interspecies, kind
Connection.
of connection. Yes, absolutely.
And then with our dogs here, again, we've fostered for a long time. We've been boarding dogs since 2015. And the two, so our first German Shepherd that we rescued when we moved here, he crossed over in March last year. And then the White Shepherd was the one that crossed over in November of 2021. So they were pretty close together in crossing over. And Bandit, so the white one, he was 10 years old. He had a brain tumor and he became symptomatic very suddenly. And things were so progressed by that point that there just wasn't a lot that we could do. The doctor said maybe surgery was a possibility, but as they get older, there are complications related to anesthesia. And then he still couldn't guarantee that it was going to extend his life or really improve his life much. And then with our boy Cooper that crossed over in March last year, he was 13. And he was the, well, I don't even know what to call him because sometimes I refer to him as the big brother to everyone here, which he was, but he was my heart dog. So in all the years growing up with German Shepherd dogs, and I've got a couple of others that are way high up on the list, just as far as connections. But Cooper was my heart dog, my once in a lifetime dog, whether he was a German Shepherd or not, my once in a lifetime dog. He taught more fosters how to be family dogs. He taught more boarders how to get along with everyone and what the rules are and don't pick on the cats, don't get under the horse's feet. Without even, I didn't teach him that. That was who he was. And he helped me see, again, he helped me understand how smart animals are, how aware animals are, and how much they want to please their humans, how much they want to take care of their humans or their property or
They
their
want the job.
flock. They find joy in the work. That's what they're about. And if I had a nickel for every dog owner I've met that is struggling with a behavior issue, but then they go on to share, well, I work, you know, 11 hours a day. And so he's in the crate or he's locked in the bathroom or you know, there's a baby gate and he's
Yeah.
out in the kitchen or whatever. And then when I get home, I got to go work out. And then I've got my meeting with my supervisors to, I don't know. And
Yeah.
I'm looking at, where is there even any time for you to connect with this animal?
Yeah.
When does he ever feel like you are his person, aside from the fact that you put food down for him and keep his water bowl full, and I guess let him go to the bathroom every now and then? Where is that? And I feel so bad for the humans and the dogs.
I feel bad for the humans too, because I hear that as well, that people have to go to the gym or they have to do this class or that class when they have a horse to ride. And I go,
What about?
if I failed as a trainer, my backup plan is to start a fat farm where people come and take care of the mowing and
Kidding.
pick the stalls and
No
feed the
kidding.
horses. I go,
No kidding.
that is the workout, you
Yeah.
guys, is
Oh my
running a
goodness.
farm
No
is
kidding.
the
All right. Or if
workout.
you have a dog, then get out and run with him and
Absolutely.
walk with him. You
No,
know,
one of my ex-boyfriends, he used to take my mare, my Arabian mare. He'd take her on the halter and lead rope. She'd go jogging with him down the dirt roads, out through the neighborhood. And he would take the horses jogging with him all the time because didn't
fun.
have a dog, but he'd take the horses.
Oh, how fun. Well, and people will comment about our dogs. Your dogs are so good. And they're just like when my kids were little. We would be out in public with my kids. I have four grown children, eight grandchildren. And when we would go out to dinner or the movies or wherever, people would comment, "Oh, your kids are so good." And I'd think, "Oh my goodness, you don't even know how they each other and arguing about what I picked out for them to wear or whatever when they're littler." But I thought that's okay because that's they're learning things about themselves through that behavior as well. They're learning about each other. So it's not hurting anything. It's just kids being kids. I'll take that if it means that we can still go on vacations and fly on
Yes.
airplanes and, you know, and have them respect other people's boundaries and, you know, needs for quiet or
Yeah,
whatever.
and I see that with people with kids too. It's like this demanding of obedience and never putting a foot wrong and never giving, like a lot of times in rehab, the first week I'll work with a horse, especially a rescue horse, is letting Pandora's box of
Just let it
opinions and emotions. Just let it
Yep.
out. Just tell me everything you ever wanted to say to another, to some human. And
Yep.
I get the, if they could flip me the bird, they would be
Yep.
flipping me
Yeah. If they were cussing
the
time, they'd be cussing.
bird.
Yep. Now we have our old girl. So that second foster failure, she's probably going on about 12 now. And she's got arthritis. She has an immune disorder. She's got hip problems. So she's slow. And it's been kind of fun this last week to see her because we have this puppy. We're fostering this 3.5 month old puppy. And she's actually played with this puppy. It's been a long time since I've seen that. But she's kind of crotchety. I call her the crotchety older sister. And so when new people come around, she puts on a show and she barks and carries on. And I think, oh my goodness, your brothers are fine. Look at your brothers. They're letting them pet them. They're coming and sniffing. And you think that it's your job to stand and bark as if I don't know that there's someone new.
Yeah.
I'm talking to the person. I promise I know that there's someone here. So I'm not real sure what to do with her now. We use positive reinforcement. That's my training method anyway. But and she'll go, you know, we'll take her over and love on her and get her distracted. And then it's like she realizes again, oh, wait, those people are still here. And she's got to put on her show again. But for the most part, again, they're good dogs. So when we take them out somewhere, they behave and they don't destroy things. I was sharing with someone not too long ago. We have a lot of knickknacks and antiques and I wouldn't call them valuable things because they're just little fun little things that we find. We like to go estate sailing and but they are breakable, a lot of breakable things. And so many people, when they come to our home for the first time and they come in and see all of the breakable things around, my question is, your dogs don't like destroy everything? No, no.
Nope.
So when they first came into the home, we helped them understand, you know, this is not where you go. Here's where you go. And they're allowed on the furniture. They're parts of the family here. But I'm always intrigued by those kind of questions because typically those people ask because they've just got really rowdy dogs that they've never learned how to be comfortable or settled down or and then I go on to learn that a lot of times those dogs, they're the ones again that the people, they work 10 or 12 hours a day. The dog is in a crate, or he's home by himself, or he's locked in the bathroom, or baby gated off in the kitchen. And then the person comes home, and then there's dinner, or they've got to sit down and pay the bills, or they've got to do their Zoom meeting, or they've got to go to the gym, or, and I just
No,
think.
and I think the dogs could even adapt to being crated all day if they felt understood, safe, seen, connected with.
Correct. I think
It's like it's the same thing with horses. Some horses are stuck in a stall, or they just have to spend more of their life in a stall for whatever reason. It's not always in our control.
Right.
But I go, the time we spend with them is what allows them to cope with that
Because
restriction.
then there's still a reward. To them, it's still like a positive reinforcement, I think.
Or even more than that, I think what we're talking about is that connection. I go, I think we can all learn to deal with less than ideal circumstances
Right.
if we feel like
Emotionally.
at some point, I'm going to get that emotional fulfillment. I'm going to
Yes.
feel safe. I'm going to feel connected. I'm going to spend some energy.
I agree with that. But I think that's what's missing then in these situations. Then the
Yeah, more.
people don't understand that. So they get annoyed if the dog wants attention, or if the dog needs to go outside, or if the dog's being rowdy, then it just doesn't connect or click for them. There's something missing. The dog is
Yeah.
missing something. And again, German Shepherd dogs, particularly German Shepherd dogs, again, they have to have a job. They're happiest if they have a home to protect, or, and I'm not talking about like a guard dog, like
Right.
a attack dog or a police dog, or, but even a police dog. I mean, they don't even know they have a job. A police dog, life is a game. The
Yes.
game is to be my partner and help the, you know, catch the bad guys, or
Yeah.
if for the bad stuff or whatever. It's a huge game. And so, they
No,
don't
but
know.
I think it's not that different from people. If we had a boring life and no emotional fulfillment and no connection and nothing to do, we would be crawling the walls too.
Absolutely. Or
Yeah.
develop some really unhealthy or dangerous habits.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh my gosh. I so agree. I so
Yeah.
agree. But our boy Boone, I'll just toot a horn for him. Oh, that's Bear. He's the youngest in our pack. He is the second most recently adopted. So the most recently adopted dog or rescued dog came through Good Shepherd. He's technically the third foster failure. But we knew when we agreed to foster him that likely he would stay here because he had boarded with us without us knowing that the family would, had actually reached out initially to surrender him to Good Shepherd. So he's the third newest dog, but Boone is the middle child, even though he's the youngest. But he is now my partner. He's now the one who teaches new dogs, boarders, fosters that come in, what the rules are. You know, we're not allowed to go there. You're not allowed to pick on the cats.
Yeah,
And
don't mess with the cats.
he's not vicious or mean or
Right.
about it. He's just very confident. He's very assertive. And even that blows my mind because his story, he had been abandoned. He was left in a crate in his backyard when his family moved away. And neighbors realized after 3 or 4 days that dog is still back there in that crate. And they had not seen anyone come out to even feed him or water him. So they reached out to, I think, animal control initially. And again, Good Shepherd Rescue's been around a long, long time. So we've got fingers in everywhere, animal control departments and shelters all over the area. Even people sometimes out of state will contact us. Is there any way you can help, or who do I call, or what can you do? And so they reached out, and then that led to Good Shepherd Rescue being contacted. And so one of our representatives went and got him from the crate. And just so instantly, he loved people. Again, he was still very young. He turned two. He'll be 3 years old at the end of December this year. And he was rescued late in 2022, or very early in 2023, maybe. So he had just turned a year old when he came to rescue. And maybe that was to his advantage because he just was still very trusting and friendly and loving, but I've just loved watching him grow his confidence, the way he carries his body. And when there's a dog that's being, I don't want to say aggressive, but sometimes we'll do a meet and greet with a prospective new boarder, get a dog that's trying to test out, I guess, and see, okay, who's in charge here? Which dog is gonna
Who's top dog?
out to me? Who's top dog? And just watching the change in Boone's very, for the most part, he's very a very soft dog. You know, he's carries himself kind of like he's just got nothing to do, just he's very relaxed. But then this challenging dog will come and he's very erect. The ears change their positions. He does not make eye contact, but he holds his head up very high. And that dog might be right here, like just waiting to see. It's so fascinating to watch. He's still so young. And so I'm just so thankful that we got matched up with him. We wanted him because the foster family he was with before we adopted him from Good Shepherd. So he's not a foster failure. We adopted him. There were horses at the property. And so I would watch videos that were shared of him. And he did so well with the horses. And I thought, okay, so he wouldn't freak out or, you know, be mean to the horses. And then it just ended up being a great match for us. So, but
Oh,
my
that's
dog,
awesome.
the dogs, all the animals here, but particularly the dogs, just because I think our bond is maybe a little stronger, just because of proximity and the time we really spend together during the day, really have taught me more about love and life and loss and loyalty than any human.
And forgiveness.
No
I think
forgiveness.
working with rescue animals, it really
Oh my
blew
goodness,
my mind.
true. Yeah, and I just think that's a testament to what their purpose is here. I mean, they can have jobs and work hard, but I think the bigger purpose of being involved with animals and animals being on the earth for us to connect with is what they can teach us about ourselves, what they can
I
open us.
think they wake up the very best parts of us if we let them.
Right. If we let them. Right. That's why, again, it's the humans that need the training.
Well, let's wrap it up on that note. I think it's so easy to talk to you. We
Oh,
just blah, blah, blah,
me
blah, blah.
too. And I'm loving that I'm
But
finding more and more things that I have in common with you. And just
yes,
so your audience
snakes, who
will know,
knew?
yeah, just so your audience will know, again, I found Kirsten because I was searching for videos on YouTube on how to put medication in a horse's eye. I'd never had to do it, and one of our clients had a horse that needed medication put into his eye 3 times a day while they were going to be away for 2 weeks. So I thought, okay, I got to learn. And this didn't came up like 2 days before they were supposed to leave. He had this eye problem develop. Watched a lot of videos and then came across your video. And I thought, what? Wow. Okay. That's different from anything I've already seen. I'm going to try that one. And if it didn't work, then for me, it would just mean that's not the best one for me. Maybe there's something about my height, or maybe there's something about my. This is a horse that we've cared for a long time, so I was comfortable trying whatever I had to try. But even on the first attempt, it went really well. I got better as time went on. So again, I'm going to thank you for that right here, right now.
Well, I'm so
Now,
glad that was
and
helpful.
I just thought at the time that'll be our only connection, which is still a great connection. And I love the little serendipitous, you know, things that happen on YouTube with building friendships and relationships. But then when I had you on the show and learned some more things about you, I thought, okay, wow, it's she's not just my gonna be my horse person now. So
No, and that's why, even though this particular podcast is all about horses, I love connecting with animal people of all sorts because the exact conversation we just had is very close to my heart. And I think it's what all of us that live with animals know, and it's what we love to talk about with each other, but it's not really out there in the public very
No,
much. Like,
and it's
I.
not everybody's thing. It isn't everybody's thing. But
Yeah.
I hope to inspire people to explore. I hope that when I share my passion for animals, again, like you said, even the undesirable ones, even the creepy crawly ones or the slithery ones or the ones that kind of have a bad rap for various reasons, I want to inspire people to think of it from a different point of view and to realize that, wow, there maybe there could be something beautiful about a snake.
There's something magical.
Yes, about a jumping spider.
Yeah, or beside just having this horse that I take on a trail ride.
Yeah.
There's a huge magical relationship that's available.
Yeah, we can be friends and partners and
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do. I want to educate and encourage and inspire people and just open them to the possibilities of what can happen.
And you have quite an extensive playlist on your channel. So you guys listening, it's on YouTube and it's called Rich Cat Ranch is the channel. And it's RichKatRanch. And you have, I think, 800 or 900 videos on your.
It's getting up there.
It's getting up there.
Ready made content here.
Yes. And some really interesting playlists, like you do a music playlist, you do the ducks and geese playlist, you do the RK or the Rich Cat Ranch Roundup, where you interview all kinds of people. And that's the one you hosted me on. And so I encourage you guys to check out Kathy's channel because it's a huge variety. And I loved having this conversation with you today about connecting, having that heart connection with all kinds of animals. And I think you said that when you interviewed me, and it really stuck with me that when we look at what we can learn, and I think especially when they're in the role of caregiver, or we're in the role of trainer, or in the role of a professional of some sort, the pressure starts to mount that we always have the answers. And I go, no, the one who really has the answer is the animal itself.
Right. Yeah. The one who's learning is the one that's.
Yeah, we have a lot to learn. And I can throw out different strategies and theories and ideas. But at the end of the day, that horse tells me that works for me.
Right.
Or it doesn't.
Right.
And I go, nothing wrong with the strategy. Yeah, it just wasn't appropriate for this horse at this moment.
Right. Just like with a human. It's not going to always be a one size fits all with communicating or interacting or having successful relationship with humans. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's
so
no
I appreciate,
different.
I appreciate so much what you're doing on your channel. I'm learning
thank
so
you.
Much because of what you're doing on your channel. So
thank you
for that. I want to thank you for having me as your guest today because I love talking about this stuff too. And I don't get a chance often to just talk about, you know, so many of the things that I'm passionate about. People know, I think people know it, but
yeah. No, and that's why I started the podcast, was these conversations that I really enjoy having with other animal people, interesting people. It's like, why not record it and just throw it out there in the world? Because I think there are many more of us out there than maybe, I think when I used to think of producing a horse video, I thought I had to show something fancy. And I go, I think it's just as important to learn that there's this magical connection available to us.
Yeah.
And it's not fancy. It's just everyday.
Yep. Everyday stuff. Yep.
Yes.
Well, you're doing a good job of it.
You are too. Thank you for doing your channel. And thank you for coming on to the Horse Geeks podcast.
Yes.
All right, everybody. So we'll wrap it up there. And thanks for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you on the next Horse Geeks podcast.